You write in your book, The American Media, that people nowadays, at a record clip, have tremendous anxiety, depression, stress. What's causing all this?
Well, this is what has fascinated me. I moved to Los Angeles about 7 years ago, just towards the end of the dot-com era in the late 90s. And, of course, it was sweeping the whole country, but I think in the big urban centers such as Los Angeles and New York, it was more obvious that people were really in an illusionary state. They felt that the world was going to go on as it was at that point forever. You know, we used to wake up every morning thinking that the stock market would continue to go up at 20% each year, and life would be extraordinary, and there were no more wars. A man wrote a book called The End of History, which you may remember, etc. The Berlin Wall had fallen, and life was going to be rosy. And it began to occur to me that this was very much like what you see in the actual disorder of mania that you get, that individuals get. So this was sort of a cultural version of it. And so I began to wonder about that, and the more I thought about it, the more it seemed that there were extraordinary similarities. You know, mania is one of these things. If you ever had a friend who had experienced manic depressive illness, which is one of the things I've studied in relation to thyroid hormone a lot, then people become, at the beginning, very happy, and they're sort of exciting and have a lot of energy and lots of genuinely interesting ideas, and they think a bit faster than the rest of us and so on and so forth. But that eventually moves off into something which is so accelerated that they can't keep themselves organized, and then they slowly become rather subjectively grandiose, and they begin to see themselves as something special or even godlike, and this thing eventually ends up into them being suspicious of other people and grandiose and disorganized and so on, as I've just said, such that they can't really cope with their everyday life.
Are we alone though with this, Peter, in this country, or is it all over the planet?
Manic depressive illness is all over the world, but in terms of its individual illness. But what I think happens, what has happened to us in the U.S., you know, by nature, Americans are wonderfully exciting and opportunistic and optimistic people. We're, as I say in the book, you know, one of the interesting explanations for all this for me as to why we are so much ahead of the curve in all sorts of things, technology, et cetera, is that we are extremely fascinated by the world, and I think that comes from our migrant heritage. In fact, I postulate in the book with some evidence that we're not only a social experiment in the U.S., we're a genetic experiment. And so I think that the way in which this particular mania comes about, I don't use the word mania in the book as a description of a disease. I don't think Americans have any more manic depressive illness than anywhere else in the world. But I do think that we have a predisposition in our migrant temperament to doing things which are at the edge of the curve. We push the edge constantly. And I think in this particular instance, the optimism and the edge pushing sort of combine to give us this frenzy which we all live in now. I was listening to the clips of your show, past shows, presumably, as we were waiting here, about individuals who are talking about the 24/7 world and the electronic intrusion in their world and so on. I think this is all part of a pattern that one might call the American frenzy or the American mania, which is where the book takes from. And, of course, as you said in the introduction too, my concern is, as a physician and a psychiatrist, that we've now begun to push the limits of our physiology, which is why you see this rising anxiety. It's doubled in the last 15 years. Over 30% of the American population now, in epidemiological studies, say they're tense most of the time. They worry about things, and life is riskier than it used to be, and they're working harder. I mean, I'm sure your audience knows that. 20 to 25% of the population now work around the clock in the country, and we have put ourselves in a position where we are at the very edge of our physiological tolerance, and I think you can see that in terms of the way in which some things are breaking down. We're becoming more obese than we should for our own good, for example. And I
is that because of boredom? Yeah, maybe it's because of boredom. Maybe it's because of a lot of other problems. I mean, it also seems to me that people are working, as you say, more and more, but they're not getting ahead.
That's right. I think as one person said to me the other day when I was talking about this, he said, I was saying that I think it, in the sense that what we've entered is a bit like mania. You know, happiness lies behind us. We passed it. We've sort of lost it. We've shot right by it, thinking that we're still pursuing it. And he said, yes, he said, it's the rear view mirror syndrome. You know, happiness is in the rear view mirror now, but we're still driving ahead, thinking that, you know, if we work harder and we get just a little bit more of what we want financially, or a bigger house, or a new stereo, or a smaller cell phone, that somehow this will bring us happiness. And of course, it is eroding happiness because, as I point out in the book, human beings are very complicated creatures, but one of the most important things to them is our social organization, is our ability to communicate with each other, to learn from each other. But when you have a 24/7 world, what's happening is the individualism is rising because we have to. We spend a lot of time commuting. We spend time with our laptops. We spend time away from other people, which actually may support this materialism which we have fallen into. But it doesn't support the social networks which make us happy.
You know, people become more and more frustrated the more they have these toys, these gadgets that they strive for. Maybe they want two more cars or whatever it is. But once they get it, they're still not happy.
That's right, because I think we confuse pleasure with happiness. You see, I think pleasure is very important to human beings. If you look at the way the brain is wired, actually, our brains are reward-driven for survival reasons. Although we call it reward now, it is in fact on the a way in which for many, many centuries we were able to distinguish between something that's going to be good for you and something that's dangerous. And so the survival systems that we have in our brain, which I explain in the book, are very much harnessed by our modern market systems, and the curiosity, the reward-driven things, that's what takes us into these new shiny objects. We're like sort of magpies. We love all this stuff, and why not? I mean, but the trouble is that is a pleasurable pathway, but it's not a pathway to happiness. I think one has to distinguish that.